work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com will simplify your postage needs and add valuable time back into your workday, so you have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off UPS and USPS. Send invoices, checks, certified mail, packages, and anything else you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. If you sell online, connecting with every major marketplace and shopping cart is easy. Plus, you can schedule package pickups through their dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with Stamps.com's Rate Advisor. Add more flexibility to your workday with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
My love for books starts from a very young age. And then I had a male nanny who would tell me stories from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, the great Indian epics, every day. So it fascinated me. It took me into faraway places. And then when I had my own children, I decided to write children's picture books so that I could read these stories through them.
Welcome to the True Fiction Project, a podcast series that explores the origins of fiction. Every week, we begin with an interview, nonfiction, followed by a creative piece, fiction, inspired by something from the interview. The idea is to demonstrate, of course, that fiction is born out of our life experiences. Now, here's your host, storyteller, author, public speaker, health and wellness expert, Renita Hora.
Welcome back to the True Fiction Project. I am your host, Renita Hora. And I have with me today Bhakti Mathur from Hong Kong. Now, she is an author. She writes children's books about Indian mythology and history, but she writes other things too. She writes poetry. She writes essays. All of this happened after her long stint as a banker. Yes, she used to be a banker, but now she juggles her time between writing, practicing yoga, and of course, taking care of her family. And what is most exciting, certainly to me, is the fact that she is Hong Kong's first bibliotherapist and an executive coach, but a bibliotherapist. Welcome, Bhakti. It's so great to have you on the True Fiction Project.
Hi, Renita. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be on the show today.
Bhakti, you are so accomplished. I mean, what is it that you don't do or cannot do?
No, thank you for such kind words. Just ask my husband and children and they'll read out a list of things that I can't do.
No. I'm sure that's not the case. I'm particularly excited to speak with you today, Bhakti, not only about all these various things, but I just feel like we have so much in common. I'm also from Hong Kong. I used to live there. I don't live there anymore. I am also from the University of Hong Kong, my alma mater. I am also from the South China Morning Post, my alma mater. I used to write for them. So I feel like, wow, when I read your bio, I said, oh my gosh, who is this? Is this my doppelganger?
Yes, that's a lot of connections. I love that.
Yes, me too. But I am not, and I cannot claim to be, the first, second, or sort of any, you know, nth amount of whatever, bibliotherapist. So let's start with that. What is a bibliotherapist to begin with?
So a bibliotherapist is somebody who recommends books to people. So now for all the readers there, you know, we've been reading books and books educate us, inform us, and they entertain us. But books play another very important role, which is to heal. And a bibliotherapist focuses on this part, on healing, on using fiction and nonfiction and poetry to help people heal.
This is amazing because I immediately resonate with what you are saying, but I've got so many questions. And the very first being, do people even read? Like, it's one thing for a therapist to recommend them the books, but everybody doesn't read, right? I mean, I wish they did, but tell me your thoughts on that.
So yes, this is a good point that you bring up because I have come across people who don't read. And I think everybody's a reader, and the reason someone hasn't got into reading is because they haven't read the right book for them. And I think this is where bibliotherapy becomes very important, because what a bibliotherapist does is They try and understand the person's reading habits or the lack of it, and more importantly, what's happening in their life, the big and the small. And then based on that, they recommend a set of books which would interest them. So that becomes very key in assessing what kind of a book would this person like. So for example, if somebody is going through a traumatic experience, one might want to include a mystery which takes their mind away on one hand, and also include a book where they can see a character going through a similar situation, so that when they see and read it through a character, it resonates with them, but there's also a bit of that distance between them and the character. And that distance is very often what brings about clarity and when healing starts. And you feel you're not alone. I mean, I'm sure even for you, Renita, of course, you're a reader. If you think about it, you've probably been healing or reading books without being conscious about it for various issues. So whenever we pick up a book when we are facing an issue or when we want to learn about something else or something new, we pick up a book, and that is in effect practicing bibliotherapy.
I see. So is the idea to recommend to your clients a list of fiction so that they, as you said, it takes them away from their trauma, daily lives, or whatever it is that you are working on? Or is the idea to give them nonfiction, perhaps literary nonfiction, or anything else that describes the story of someone else who went through something similar?
So I normally include both. So I include fiction, nonfiction, as well as poetry. And the reason is, in fiction, because of what I was telling you about a character, so you look at your problem in a very indirect way, and it brings out lots of emotions, but you can always close the book and put it away and come back to it. So you're looking at your problem from a non-confrontational point of view. And for the same issue, then I also recommend nonfiction. So I'll give you an example. I had a client who had anxiety. One of the books I recommended was The Man Who Planted Trees by Jean Giono, who's a French author. And this is about a shepherd in France who realizes that the village he lives in, the trees are vanishing. So he takes on this huge project where he plants 100 acorns a day for 30 years. And of course, after 30 years, he sees the effect. But what really cures him is the process of the labor, the digging, the shoveling, the watching, and the waiting. So this is a book which really reminds you of the healing power of nature. And I also recommended a nonfiction book called Chatter by Ethan Pross. And Chatter talks about strategies we can use to actually quieten our mind when we are feeling anxious. So a simple thing as journaling, taking a walk in nature, or asking ourselves questions like, what advice would we give to a friend who came to us with the same problem? So it's very interesting that both work and both have, I think, an equally important place.
Obviously, in order to recommend these, you would have had to have read them and researched them yourself. I mean, it goes without saying that you are an avid reader. Has this always been the case, or was it since the time you decided to become an executive coach? Or tell me a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. So my mother was a librarian. And while I was growing up, my summer holidays were often spent in libraries. So I was left there at 9 o'clock, and my mother would go to her library to work, which was an adult library. I was left in this kid's library, and then she would come back and pick me up at 6 in the evening. And I guess libraries are inexpensive babysitters. And I was resentful in the beginning, but then I had no choice. But I grew to love books as a result, because I would spend all my time reading. And I have very fond memories of my mother reading this book, Horton Hears a Who by Dr. Seuss. So reading was a big culture in my family, and with my exposure to books. And of course, as I grew up, then Sherlock Holmes, Nancy Drew, Daphne du Maurier. So my love for books starts from a very young age. And then I had a male nanny who would take care of me as I became older. He couldn't read or write, but he was the best storyteller in the world. So when I'd come back from school, and this is a time, Renita, where there are no iPhones and iPads. So he would catch hold of me and tell me stories from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, the great Indian epics, every day. So imagine for a child having a 2-hour storytelling session every day. So it fascinated me. It took me into faraway places. And as I grew up, then I wanted to read these stories. And I read them. And then when I had my own children, I had memories of these stories being told to me. And I somewhere wanted to keep that tradition of oral storytelling alive. So I decided to write children's picture books so that I could read these stories through them. So it was a very personal journey. And yes, a long association with books.
My gosh, this sounds like heaven on earth to me. Where did you grow up, Bhakti? Which part of India?
I grew up in Delhi. And you know, when you were talking about heaven on earth, I'm remembering this quote by this author called Julian Borges. He said, "I've always imagined paradise to be some kind of a library."
I love it. I can see the stairs of this antiquated library leading to more and more books and bookshelves with more books. Oh my gosh. I'm definitely with Julian, you know. So that's interesting. Your picture books, or your children's books, I should say, the Amma Tell Me and Amma Take Me series, that was inspired by your experience with storytelling from your nanny when you were a kid.
Yes, the Amma Tell Me was inspired by that, absolutely. And the Amma Take Me was Penguin's idea, who are the publishers of that series. And I really liked the idea because there were so many places in India I hadn't visited myself. And this book gave me the opportunity to travel with my children, who were around 7 and 9 at that time. But it was wonderful that I could get to travel with them to the Golden Temple, to Taj Mahal, to Shirdi, to Tirupati. So it was as much sort of a cultural awakening and immersion for me as it was for them.
And are these nonfiction children's books?
Yes, so they're like a travelogue of her mother and two children. And they're for children in the 9 to 13 year age group. And Penguin came up with this idea. I liked it because I remember while growing up, if I had to read about a temple, a historical place, I found the books very boring. So my whole idea was to make it very interesting so that, you know, every parent or grandparent who bought the book, they would say, yes, we want to visit the place. So what I did is, the way I've written it is, by through questions my two children actually asked me as we walked through the monuments. So of course I was busy making notes on what they were asking, and they became quite smart and started bribing me, saying that you're using us using our questions for this. But hopefully that, you know, those are questions that an actual child would ask, and I hope that makes it fun and interesting for the readers.
That's the Amma Take Me series. What is the Amma Tell Me series?
So the Amma Tell Me series is picture books for children in the 2 to 8 age group. These are on the festivals we celebrate. So the idea came to me because one is I wanted to share the stories. Also, Holi was coming. And I remember it was November 2010. And I couldn't really find a book that I liked or told the story the way I wanted to. And I was sitting with my husband and I said, I remember celebrating and being told the story by my nanny and by my grandmothers in such a fun way. And I want to write it for the kids. And he said, that's such a fantastic idea. Just do it. And, you know, at that time, it sounded like a Nike ad with the rah-rah, just do it. But it got me started. And, you know, we have so many festivals and millions of gods and goddesses that as every festival came, the next Diwali came, I wrote about that. And next Janmashtami came, and so on and so forth. So that series has now grown to 14 books.
Unbelievable. So no dearth of books, no dearth of stories, no dearth of anything. Going back to your role as a bibliotherapist, to be honest, I hadn't even heard of this kind of terminology. I never knew there was such a thing as a bibliotherapist. So when you say you're Hong Kong's first, do they exist somewhere else?
That's a great question. And I hadn't heard of it till a few years earlier. Till a friend, actually, who was studying with me in HKU, sent me an article on bibliotherapy, which was published in the New York Times. And I got interested. And then the same friend gifted me this book called The Novel Cure, written by two bibliotherapists called Ella Berthoud and Susan Elderkins. And they're based in the United Kingdom, in London. And the name is so interesting, The Novel Cure, because it lists about 150 ailments, from depression, anxiety, heartache, to empty nesters, to changing careers, anything that you can think of that one would face. And for every ailment, it has one or more books as the prescription given. So there's 750 books that are prescribed. And I was fascinated. So I contacted Ella, one of the authors of the book, and I had a bibliotherapy session with her. And then she mentioned she also trains people to be bibliotherapists through a 16-week course, which is what I went and studied with her.
I find it fascinating that empty nesting would be considered an ailment. I'm loving it. I can see it. And I'm very curious as to what the cure is of the recommendation, what kind of books. So I'm definitely going to explore that one with you myself. I have to ask, obviously, there's a range of writing that you do. You write children's books, you write essays, you write poetry. I wonder what it is you are going to read today.
So, you know, poetry is something that's been very close to my heart. And that's what I thought that I'd like to read. And the reason it's been very close to my heart is I think poems have healed me. They've given me a space to express and label my emotions. And they've been like a friend. I think there is some magic of putting words to paper where you almost feel you're sharing it with a friend. And in that process, I think it creates that distance between you and the problem or the issue that you're struggling with, which is where the healing starts. And so I have written about things which I found difficult in my life. My grandmother, who I was extremely close to, passing away. Then I have memories from a trip to Banaras and visiting the ghats out there. And then, of course, another difficult relationship which didn't work out. I've chosen three poems that show my struggles or reflect my struggles with these and how writing helped me look at it in a different way.
So interesting that you've chosen these because, of course, you have read them to me before we did the show. So I'm familiar with all three to some extent. And I think they are connected. Correct me if I'm wrong, because you talk about your grandma who has just passed away. And then you talk about Banaras or Varanasi and the ghats, which really is this city of, somebody described it as a 24-hour really living city, because you see birth, you see death, you see the Ganga, you see life, you see all aspects of it. And then the third one that you had mentioned, the thorn bird, no spoilers, but also there is a connection. So this idea of life and death, is that something that you explore in a lot of your work?
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up. I think more than life and death, I think it's the impermanence. It's the impermanence of life in the sense it's an impermanence of a thought or a feeling. So what writing this made me realize is that these feelings and thoughts are like clouds passing by, and that I am actually the sun shining in the sky, and I should just watch the cloud come and watch the cloud go. And of course, it's so much easier said than done, and it really requires training. But it gave me a flavor of that. So I would say, yes, life and death, but more about nothing is really permanent and things pass.
Yes. So is the sun perhaps distressed by things clouding it and it needs therapy? Or is it the impermanence of things that you feel a need to heal from, which is why you write the poetry?
I did feel a need to heal from them, yes. And I think it was because, you know, we don't realize that we are actually the sun. And all we need to do is wait and just watch the clouds passing by instead of thinking we are the clouds and identifying too much with it and feeling surrounded by it, just to know that it will go and we will shine again. And that's something that I took away from writing.
Beautiful, Bhakti. We're going to be linking to your websites and other links that you give us in the show notes. But before we wrap up, let our listeners know where they can find your work.
So they can contact me on the website, but my work, as in the books, are available on Amazon. They're available in bookstores in India, in Hong Kong, and in the US. I'm very happy to be contacted. My website is bhaktimatho.com, and for bibliotherapy is bookswithb.net.
Wonderful. And Bhakti, in terms of your writing, what can we expect to see next?
So I have just finished writing a book on the hill forts of Rajasthan, which is in the Amma Take Me series. And it was very exciting because last summer I traveled to the forts. I went to Chittorgarh, Kumbhalgarh, and visited Amer in Jaipur. And I've written about those forts and the rich history of Rajasthan's warriors coming from Mewar. And that was very exciting. So that book should be launched in September this year. I am currently working on the avatars of Vishnu in the Amma Tell Me series. And I'm working on the third avatar of Vishnu, which is Varaha the boar. And what is really interesting in my research, I found is that the avatars of Vishnu trace evolution of life on Earth. So Vishnu first came as a fish because life began in water. That is his first avatar, Matsya. And then the second, he came as a tortoise, as Kurma, because then we gravitated from life on water to amphibians. Then the third avatar, he comes as Varaha, the boar. And that's what I'm working on.
That is just fascinating. And again, I'm finding so much commonality because I also explore the avatars of Vishnu in a YA fantasy fiction series that I'm writing. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we'll have to connect on a different note.
Yes, we'll have to connect. Absolutely. That sounds wonderful and very exciting. And I'd love to hear about that.
Well, Bhakti, thank you so much for being our guest today on the True Fiction Project. I cannot wait to further delve into your work.
Thank you, Renita. It was a pleasure speaking with you and reflecting on my journey. And also, I was thinking of the name, The True Fiction Project. I love it because I think fiction at times is truer than life. So it's such a beautiful name.
Isn't that the truth? That was Bhakti Mathur. She is a writer, the author of the Amma Tell Me and Amma Take Me series of children's books. She is an executive coach and Hong Kong's first bibliotherapist. And this is the True Fiction Project, and I am your host, Renita Hora.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
And now to the premise of the True Fiction Project, which of course is to create fiction out of nonfiction.
This is a poem called An Indian Summer, written by me, Bhakti Mathur. My grandmother died suddenly. In the midst of a family wedding, her gentle heart stopped beating in the blistering heat of an Indian summer. Brothers, sisters, friends, children, grandchildren came together that summer. Grief soared like the temperature and then descended on us like a heat wave. After 4 days, it rained. Like a balm, it soothed the earth and our sorrow. Morning brought out an old charcoal and put it in the middle of the courtyard. It looked lonely, its woven ropes inviting us to fill it with things she loved. We stood around, waiting for the pujari to arrive, to start the ceremony to send the departed soul to the afterlife. Then an aunt came and put a pink Banarsi sari on one corner of the charcoal, my grandmother's favorite. My mother put a gray pashmina shawl, my grandmother's companion in solitary winters. My uncle brought a copy of Manorama, her favorite magazine and friend on many an afternoon. A friend put a bottle of her favorite Itar al-Madina, its light citrus smell slowly lifting our spirits. A cookbook, a lipstick, a radio. My grandfather's photograph soon filled the charcoal. As we looked at the eclectic collection, we smiled. The pujari arrived. He sat in front of the charcoal, lighting the other bhakti, getting ready to start the ceremony. Then a voice said, "Wait!" It was my grandmother's brother, her favorite and most beloved. He walked towards the charcoal, slowly, deliberately, a brown parcel in his hands. Out came a packet of charms and a bottle of Old Monk, my grandmother's cigarettes and her favorite drink, her loyal companions laid out on the crowded charpoy. The Pujari smiled. There were a few raised eyebrows, ahs and giggles. And in those few moments in the courtyard, a celebration started, a celebration of life, that Indian summer. This poem is called Varanasi, written by me, Bhakti Mathur. A city of water by the Ganges, on fire, by the column of light, the flash of the divine, the lingam first manifested. A city called Kashi, the shining one, glowing with the embers of the Mahashamshana, the great funeral pyre, burning like the third eye of Shiva. A city where souls are freed, sins are burned. Where if you take a walk by the Manikarnika Ghat, you may just see a man, a naked man, with matted hair, trident in his hand, dancing on the fires, holding his hand out, inviting you to the other side. Could it be a soul on its final journey? Or could it be the great God Shiva himself, dancing in the fiery rings of our hearts, burning our ego to ashes on the true funeral pyre? And the final poem is called The Thorn Bird, read by me, Bhakti Mathur. Our relationship died one day. It had been sick for a while, rotting. I buried it in my garden. A day later, a single stem emerged. A few days later, a rose in full bloom, inviting me. I plucked it and felt blood trickling down my fingers. I cremated it on the bank of the Ganges, offering the remains to the holy river. As I released them, they became red embers, glaring at me, bursting into flames, daring me, dancing to the chants of Om, reverberating from the temples on the Ghats. I took the ashes to the Tower of Silence, watching the birds circling in, getting ready for the feast. The next morning, a sound woke me. Someone singing, a sad song, it seemed. I looked out and saw a thorn bird impaled on the highest branch of a tree, singing a love song, bleeding away our relationship and what remained.
Here at the True Fiction Project, we are always looking for great stories that make for compelling fiction. So, if you have a great story or know somebody who does, or if you are a writer who would like to contribute, then please do get in touch with us at renita.com/contact.
Thank you for listening to the True Fiction Project with Renita Hora. Be sure to subscribe to the newsletter to receive more inspiring stories showing how fiction is born from our everyday experiences. For more information, visit www.truefictionproject.com.
of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at 1/3 of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.